We're going to go through what we can in the time that we have today, and there is a majority of the conferees on the House side that are also on the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Solberg is the lead or ranking member on that committee, and has some other duties to attend to preparing for that meeting today. So we will do what we can to get through. Ways and Means is scheduled for 3:30 upstairs. So we are going to move through with some things that we have on the docket. One of them was the adoption of the union contracts. We were going to have the union folks and Department of Employee Relations come forward and just answer some questions for us briefly. And I believe that we're ready to adopt that today and move another issue on. And then we had a couple other employee relations issues that we were going to chat about as long as Dewar is here today. Senator Kassadin, everything sound good to proceed?
I'm ready to go.
Okay, and then just for members of the audience and for members of the conference committee, we will be meeting this afternoon as long as we can. The House members will have to go on to Ways and Means, and then I have to be on this Pioneer TV show tonight, and so we will be coming back tomorrow at a time that we will try to mutually work out and probably announce on the floor, assuming that the Senate and House don't go on forever. We'll try to get together as well tomorrow. We are not planning on meeting Saturday or Sunday. I know that's to the disappointment of everyone in the room.
Mr. Chairman, it is your intention, however, to meet tomorrow, and we'll meet well into the evening in order to get as much done as we can.
We're going to try to accomplish as much as we possibly can tomorrow, Senator, correct? So members have your... Well, I don't think you need your jammies because we're at midnight. We have to be completed, but we'll try to get as much done as we can. And Senator Kassadin and I will probably be contacting people that we need to have come forward if we do need testimony. If there are members of the conference committee who have folks that you want to bring in for brief testimony to answer a question on a provision in one or the other bill, please let Senator Kassadin or I know so we can schedule it for either tomorrow or for next week, because we really need to A, keep it brief, but B, have an informed membership, because there are some things on the House and Senate side that the members have never seen. We've never seen the modular home, manufactured home article. None of us have seen it in any committee we've sat on, and I know there's some provisions on the House side that the folks over here have never seen before, so we want to have an informed group here.
Sure.
Senator Kassadin.
Sure, I think we should note that the work group and the elections issues has met, and thank you for their extra effort. I think things are going well, and I've asked to have the group come forward with more of a written report. Also, I would just note that so that we can look at each item and consider them, and we'd really like your recommendations on every item if possible. Second thing I would note is that the group was free to invite in whomever they wanted, and there has been some concern expressed that some people didn't know or have the opportunity, particularly from the county perspective. So I'd ask when you meet to go over your set of recommendations that you afford that others opportunity to be heard. But I do want to remind everyone that the work group is just going to bring back a set of recommendations to us, and we will review their recommendations and act on their recommendations as a body. And at that time, if anyone wishes to testify in or raise concerns about their recommendations, there will be that opportunity as well. But thank you to Representative Hilty and De La Forest and Senator Higgins and Senator Michelle for doing the extra work.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Do you have a day in mind, Mr. Chair, that you want to talk about the elections provisions?
Senator Higgins, my expectation would be early next week. I would like the report. I don't know if Senator Kassadin has some. I don't want to rush the group because I think if we give you some quality time rather than making you rush, perhaps you could come to some agreement on language. So I guess I would like to have it perhaps Monday or Tuesday, Senator Kassadin.
I think that would be fine, Mr. Chairman. We're going to try and advocate that we get targets for our division so we can go forward. And not be delayed for some grand global budget agreement. and it appears that there's agreement on the leadership of the House, the Senate, with the governor that there will be an effort to do that, division by division rather than a global agreement. And so hopefully early next week we will have a target, and as everyone knows, once you have the target, then a lot of the other things just fall into place. So we would like to get through as much language as we can so that we are prepared.
I think it would be my intent. Senator Kaskaden has the gavel tomorrow. I will have it on Monday, Senator Kaskaden Tuesday. I don't think that really matters, at least not to me. But what I would say is that it would be my intention that we have the elections and campaign report, and that we have a set-aside time where we handle, can you throw candy at parades or can't you? Are we going to have a change to the gift ban stuff or not? Are we going to change the campaign practices laws a little here and there? And work through your recommendations first, and then all the items you're punting back to the main committee, perhaps just go through and have a sifting out of what we can all live with. And then that same day we'll need Ms. Olson, I'm sure, is here somewhere. Jean Olson. Yep. And we will be sure to make sure. You will be here every day, I bet. Okay, so we'll just make sure that you're here that day, because we need the expertise, I think, from you folks. Okay, with that, I would ask members to turn on the side-by-side to page R65. I would ask for the Department of Employee Relations to come forward, or Mr. Hubinger, whoever is here on the union contract issues, that would like to just give us a brief outline what they do. I don't know who's here to just give us a brief explanation. Doer or either one, it doesn't have to be. Okay, why don't we have Employee Relations come forward, since you actually did the negotiating. And then is Ms. Blyle here from the... AFSCME, and then Mr. Bergson here from Maine by chance? Or any of the other unions impacted? Okay, if we'd have you come forward, good afternoon. If you could just give us a brief outline of the contracts that we are ratifying, and introduce yourself for the record, please.
No, but the other people are not.
We were going to have the... Are they local? Are they Minnesota people? This group? I don't know.
Good afternoon. If you could introduce yourself.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Paul Larson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Employee Relations. In that capacity, I also serve as the State Labor Negotiator. What you have before you is the ratification of the state employee contracts that were not ratified during the last legislative session. These contracts include the AFSCME Unit 8 Correctional Guards Unit. These are essential employees. They elected their option to go to interest arbitration. We have the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association. They are also an essential unit. They elected to go to interest arbitration. We have the Higher Education Services Office, which is a compensation plan. We have the State University Faculty Collective Bargaining Agreement. And then we also have the Minnesota Nurses Association, which is an interest arbitration eligible unit, and they also elected to go to interest arbitration. The bargaining units that I'm referencing here are bargaining units for which, with the exception of the IFO, are under our jurisdiction at the Department of Employee Relations. The awards by the interest arbitrators were consistent with the negotiated settlements from the other units that were strike eligible. In other words, this provides a zero across the board increase for both years for all of these units. It provides for the continuation of step movement for those employees that were not at the step, at the top of their step, and it also provides for the same insurance package that was consistent with the other negotiated settlements, and that is also consistent with all of the other employees in the state employee group insurance program that participate with us.
Good afternoon, Ms. Blyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Subdivision 1 is Unit 8 ARB award, and that would include our folks from AFSCME. The remainder of the folks were ratified in last year's contract ratification for the rest of the state employees. Thank you.
Mr. Bergson.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity, but Brian Bergson from MAPE, we don't have anybody that's included in this section.
Okay. And are the units that you know of supportive of all of these ratifications?
Mr. Mr. Chairman, Brian Bergson again from MAPE. Yes, we are.
Okay. Ms. Boyle?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we're supportive of the ratification.
Okay. Do members have questions on any of these? These are identical. We just wanted to make sure we had on the record that everyone was supportive and there wasn't any controversy with these. I know we had some issues here a couple years ago with some of this these items, but did any of the members of the committee have questions? Senator Knudsen?
No, are you taking motions now? Or are you
Representative De La Forest?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a process question. I don't have a question for the ratification aspect per se, but I did have a question about another aspect that's relevant to these groups, and I'm wondering if you'd entertain questions after we entertain a motion and,
sure.
and ratify the contract.
Absolutely. We were planning on touching on employee relation issues as long as we had the groups here. Okay, but the chair is comfortable with having a motion to ratify in block this whole section.
I will, Mr. Chairman, Senator, I will make that motion.
Senator Metzen moves to adopt the Senate position on R65, Section 29, the labor agreements starting on 37.18 through page R66, 38.33. Is there any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. That is adopted. We did have some items in the bill that we wanted to talk about, both on the House and Senate side that related to employee relations and related units. So, Representative De La Forest, I'll start with you, and then I'll go to the portions that I was interested in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question actually for all three of the witnesses. Contained within the Senate omnibus bill is an appropriation, a salary supplement, I believe it's properly known as. And I was curious, I imagine that both MAPE and AFSCME would favor the salary supplement, but I was curious as to what the position was, especially the Department of Employee Relations. And Mr. Chairman, I had a follow-up question, if I could, after that.
When we start with the department is that okay, or who is the question directed to?
All three, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, okay, Ms. Boyle, you can go ahead and start.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Julie Boyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. Yes, we are supportive. We've done some research. There's been a number of years, actually many years, since there was a salary sup. We're looking back to 1995, and actually we're not sure of the dollar amount because that was dealing with some transferred reserves that could have gone into salary sup, but it's been many years. We're currently in negotiations. That money is badly needed to deal with the negotiations that are before us this summer. Thank you.
Mr. Bergson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we're MAPE is also in support of the salary supplement. As Ms. Blyle said, it's been a long time, and our folks have seen, as I'm sure all of us here can testify to, increases in health care costs and a salary freeze for the last 2 years. So it's something that we're very much looking forward to including in the process.
Mr. Chairman, or Representative De La Flores, certainly we would support that. I think it's important to note that the money that's being set aside is general fund money, and what this committee needs to be aware of that there are substantial numbers of state employees whose positions are funded out of non-general fund money. And so on the assumption that there's general fund money there for salary increases, there's also going to be a need that for the other dedicated funds that they'll be looked at as well. But this is not a holistic approach, but we certainly support it.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think there's an expectation then from what I'm understanding that these will be offered in the package somehow. As I understand in reading the language there's a flexibility as to whether or not that might be a COLA or it might go for steps, whatever the case may be, maybe even put on the table for coalition bargaining for health insurance. I'm trying to understand the process here. I'm not looking at the substance of a salary supplement. And I'd like to get your opinion because, as you know, I also sit on the subcommittee for employee relations, but I'm also fairly new to the legislature, so I really want to understand the process. And it seems to me that there can be an interpretation or that we get into an aspect, I know this isn't purist either, of legislative interference in the collective bargaining process. And I think it can cut both ways. Here's my example. I bucked my party in saying that I didn't think a salary freeze should be imposed legislatively on MAPE or AFSCME either. I always maintained that I thought the issue of wages and benefits should be fairly negotiated between the exclusive representative and management. And where, is this two sides of the same coin? If not, why not? I mean, if a salary freeze is bad to be implemented without taking it through the negotiating process first, why would it then be okay to turn around and say money, which will undoubtedly be put on the bottom line in terms of benefits for your members, why is that okay to implement legislatively as opposed to being bargained at the table?
Mr. Chairman, could I respond to Representative LaForest?
Sure.
I'm pleased that the department is here in the support of the Senate's position on salary supplement. I think one of the issues we keep struggling with, Representative De La Forest, is how do we really forecast and project what our real costs will be? And I think that as the Senate committee has met and has had the Department of Employee Relations and other representatives of the administration before us, we have consistently remarked that it's not to be expected that the salary freeze can continue the way it has, that we need to be planning and looking ahead for what kinds of costs will be incurred as we enter into contract negotiations. So the history, as I understand it, and perhaps Mr. Hubinger is here and could answer other questions, is that generally one way to do it is to simply allow the administration to go forward and negotiate contracts, and then when we have contracts that we haven't budgeted for, we have to come back and do a supplemental budget next year. Another way to do it is to simply recognize that we are entering into contract negotiations. The Senate has kept an open appropriation outside of the general fund for the special revenue accounts in the language that we have, and to say, well, realistically, we are going to have increased compensation costs if you count both salary and health benefits for our employees. So let's start to get ahead of the curve a little bit here. And start to budget for that this year, but leave the full amount is an open question because it is subject to negotiation. So what the Senate has tried to do is be fiscally prudent and say, we are going to have some costs. Let's start to budget for it now so we don't have a bigger problem next year with the deficiency budget item. And that's the Senate's intent, and I think perhaps I'm in a better position to answer why we're doing it that way than the department is, but that is why the Senate chose to do it that way.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Kiskaden, I apologize. I think if I remember now correctly, you know a little bit about the subcommittee as well, and so I'd be happy to defer to your judgment. And again, I don't make a value judgment about whether or not a salary supplement is needed or it's too much or too little. I'm just trying to grasp here the concept and how essentially, and I know that's something that won't be solved for me here today, the interplay between legislative mandates and respecting Chapter 179A and allowing the parties to hash out issues at the negotiating table, which I believe you're in a far better position to solve than the legislature. You know more about these issues collectively, and there's a history there, and I understand that type of interplay. And so, as I said, Mr. Chairman, it's something I won't dwell on and take too much of the committee's time. Certainly feel free, any of you, to talk to me offline as well. And I'm trying to understand here exactly, like I said, philosophically, you know, if we add money legislatively, well, then I know back in 2003 we also tried to freeze money legislatively, and I had a question about that, and I have a question about this. As I said, I don't make a value judgment. I just want to try and understand exactly where we're trying to go.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a good question, Representative De La Forest. I think we're just trying to be prudent in our forecasting and our budgeting. So we're kind of all tired of the cycle we seem to have caught ourselves in.
Thank you.
Okay, I get did you want the commentary from the witnesses, Representative De La Forest, or are you going to chat with them offline on this point?
Well, I understand that negotiations are ongoing right now, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps the parties would not like to tip their hand here publicly, so there's no requirement for them to make a comment. I think perhaps they know my phone number if they'd like to get in touch with me later on.
Okay. The question I have on the payment of this is on page R22 is where for members on the side-by-side, is that on line 8.7, it says that Commissioner of Finance from the various funds in the state treasury from which salaries are paid, and maybe Mr. Lundin or Ms. Roberts can help us with that, but that isn't strictly general fund, is it, Ms. Roberts or Mr. Lundin?
No, that would be an open appropriation out of the other funds. The 7 and 14 million shown there is the general fund appropriation, so that is limited, but the other funds would be considered an open appropriation.
Do you concur with that, Ms. Roberts? Okay. And I guess what I'm looking at, the interplay of this is on R23, there is a general reduction from the Commissioner of Finance across the board on 9.2. My assumption is that that's to help pay for what we're doing above. So are we really giving with one hand and taking away from another by doing what we're doing here? Or am I misreading this, that we're giving an across-the-board salary supplement, but on one hand we're taking it from the agencies, which my guess, Mr. Larson, is that what percentage of these offices and bureaucracies are personnel costs? Is it 90 or 80%? Mr. Larson, would you guess?
Mr. Chairman, I really don't feel qualified to give you that answer at this time. I guess I'd have to check on that. Are you looking at 9.2 on R23?
Yeah, I'm looking at the whole section on R23 on the general reduction. Maybe Senator Cascade and Mr. Lundin can help out how that works.
First of all, Mr. Chairman, it's linked because of the way it's laid on the paper, but in fact, the salary supplement was a floor amendment in the Senate, and Section 17 was in our bill before we took that floor amendment. So this was one of the ways that we were seeking to get the state's budget in balance and to make state government leaner, was to look at additional reductions to state agencies beyond what the governor had recommended.
Okay. And Senator Kiskin, that could be layoffs or whatever other mechanisms there is to make your budget work as an agency, correct?
Mr. Chairman, as you know, the governor had generally recommended about a 2.5% reduction to operating expenses for state agencies. I believe, if I'm recalling correct, this is an additional 3%. And so I have met with a number of the commissioners to ask, would you like us to be recommending specific programs for reduction, or would you prefer flexibility? And I think the general response is that there are some suggestions for specific things that could be reduced in state agencies. But generally, I think a good manager likes to have flexibility so that they can make adjustments. They can do temporary changes as well as permanent changes. And so really leaving it to the administration to determine how they would manage that reduction, that additional 3%.
All right. Are there any other questions on the interplay of the salary supplement and the across-the-board cuts? This is obviously a fiscal issue that we'll be dealing with later. We are trying to get a hold of Senator Marty on his provision in this bill on bringing back involuntarily terminated employees. We would like the department to stay at the table and move to R62. I believe the unions were at the table in our committee on this as well, requesting this in a different bill that I believe maybe is on the Senate. It's maybe passed the Senate, I'm not sure. And that is R62 to authorize the commissioner to enter into contracts with health plans. I believe, Ms. Blyle, that this is part of a Mike Beard bill or a Cornish bill or something. And this was to allow the employees to have a health partners or preferred one health plan. And Mr. Larson, perhaps you could help, but I remember this vaguely in the state government committee that both of the parties at the table agreed that they wanted this language. I'm just not sure, maybe the Senate had it somewhere, but I think this is something that was fairly important to both sides that we need to have a little discussion about.
Mr. Chair, I have with me, I have Lorna Smith, the director of our insurance division is ill, and Lorna will be able to give you the explanation with regard to the insurance question that you have.
Okay, Ms. Smith, to page R62, lines 50.3 to 51.15, we had this discussion, I believe, with your department and the unions that they felt that this language was needed to make the health the Health Partners and Preferred One contracts work for both sides. Could you just give us an explanation, because it's not in the Senate bill, but I think that's something we could probably take care of today for both sides.
Yeah, my name is Lauren Smith. I'm in the Department of Employee Relations. What this provision would do is exactly as you described it. It would allow us to continue our contracts with both Preferred One and Health Partners. The issue became just the way they are legally set up. We don't actually contract with them as they're described in the current language, which is a licensed health carrier. We, in fact, contract with a subsidiary of a licensed health carrier. This provision is in the Senate, in actually Senator Higgins' bill, which is, I believe it's on the floor. It did pass the policy committee.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's in. It was a bill referral to Senate Finance, and I'm not sure that it's on general orders. But I did go through Senator Higgins' committee and is in Finance, I believe.
Ms. Blyle, did you have a comment that you're in agreement with the language?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, Julie Blyle, AFSCME Council 5. I think this language is purely clarification, and that's what the department's attempting to achieve. I think. Representative Marty, the language that you're referring to is in a different section with regard to Representative Beard.
Okay. Okay, this is a House-only provision, but I know it's important for both people at the table. Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that we adopt this provision.
Senator Higgins moves adoption of the House provision on R-62, lines 50.3 to 51.15. Is there any discussion on this? Or question? More? Do you have any more questions for the testifiers?
Just to say, Mr. Chair, we're caving already and giving in the vote.
Bipartisanship.
This is bipartisanship.
He's got a little check mark thing going. We're here.
Oh, let me get.
All right. Any further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Those opposed, nay. That section is adopted. Has Senator Marty arrived, or his designee?
The staff person was here a little bit.
Or staff person who had an interest in this, or lobbyist who had an interest in this yet? Okay. Why don't we move on to another section that does relate for Dewar, and there's some budgetary items that maybe the Senate impacts your budget, and I just wanted a brief commentary on the whether it's across the board reductions. There's some different provisions here that impact the agency. I know that you are being recommended to be cut by almost 10% already, and if you do an across the board cut, some agencies are being cut a tiny bit and some are taking a pretty big chunk. Mr. Larson, do you have or anybody else, Mr. Ludemer, whoever's in the room, have some comments on how your budget may be impacted by the across the boards on top of what we're already doing? Ms. Smith?
Yeah, Lorna Smith, again with the Department of Employee Relations. If DOOR receives a budget cut and accepts the governor's recommendations, we will have further layoffs. Those layoffs result in either the elimination or reductions of services that we provide to state agencies. So services that will be impacted are those that are supported by the general fund. Therefore, it will either be our human resources, services to small agency, pay equity, affirmative action, or labor relations.
Okay. Do we have any questions from members on how the department's impacted? Okay. I don't know that we have any more items for you until we have the whistleblower slash involuntarily terminated employee issue that's going to be coming up here momentarily. And so we want to give courtesy to that issue. Senator Larson? Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, we have some pension issues in here, too, that Mr. Larson and Larry Martin comment on when we get to
Is Mr. Martin here? Because that is a House provision. I believe the Pension Commission may be meeting, Senator Larson. I'm not sure. Are you on the Pension Commission? Okay, you're not meeting then.
We have met this morning. We have a couple of items in here that we discussed in the Pension Commission this morning. So
okay.
We'll be taking those up.
Okay. I'm not sure if we should have... Mr. Martin really needs to be here to have discussion.
We have to arrange some time, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Okay. They're going to check and see if he's available. If he's not available, because I know he's helping with pension issues for later,
yes.
We can just dock that up for maybe Monday or something and have Pension Day for the House side when it's our turn.
I suggest we do it tomorrow. I don't think.
Why don't we wait? Because Mr. Martin is extremely busy helping mark up the amendments. I know.
I think Mr. Larson and Mr. Martin should both be here for those issues.
Mr. Larson, are you planning on being here for the duration of the conference committee, or someone that's educated enough on the pension issues that can comment?
Mr. Chair, Paul Larson, yes, I'll be here.
Okay, and then I just have a directive to staff as well that if you could contact Minneapolis Teacher Retirement Group, which is impacted by this, to have them here, and potentially Representative Knobloch, Representative Kahn, Representative Mullery, and the others who have been working on this. And I'll be very honest that I am not as knowledgeable on this as I should be, but I know the basic concepts.
Mr. Chairman, let me suggest we try, and even though I'll have a gavel tomorrow, let's try and take it up tomorrow and get through those sections, because I'm concerned we won't have extended meeting time next week. Tomorrow we could have a full evening. So.
Very good. Okay. Do any other members have questions on that item? Okay. What we were going to do was to take up a few more items, but my preference was to kind of dig through that, since Dewar is here today, that other one, but there, I know Senator Marty's maybe not available or...
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, you weren't specific about which items you were going to take up, so we didn't notify Senator Marty. So.
We were looking at Senate position R37 and 49, and perhaps the members who are here today would know enough about it, they could give us a little idea of what this is about.
Mr. Chairman, I think that I do think that this is something that Senator Marty should be present here, or at least someone who's advocating for this position, because this was added as an amendment to our bill. I'm trying to remember what it's the genesis of this is and where it all had been heard, but.
It was in state government.
Was it heard in state and local government and then in our division? Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to defer on that until Senator Marty can be here for that section, please.
Sure, absolutely. We want to give courtesy to the people who are responsible for this. I know there's a provision in here that's a House provision on the U of M contracting.
Can we take that up?
The person from the U of M, are you comfortable in coming down and just giving us a little discussion on that? I know there was some concern on your part. This is not really my provision. It's a Representative Krenke. Was it a floor amendment or a committee amendment?
Chairman, we considered that a committee.
Okay, that was a committee amendment that was done after while markup. Mr. Shepard, what page is that on?
Mr. Chair, members, it's on page R43 on the House side, lines 34.31 to 35.2.
This is an item that was brought up in committee kind of at the last minute. My understanding is that this was in relationship to, just give members a background, in the U of M buildings that there were two contractors, one was, union and so on and so forth, but was able to provide the services at a much lesser price. And so Representative Krenke, in responding to that concern, put in this language that is supposed to reflect what the state does when it does its contracting. And I think what we'll do is we'll hear from the USO, the membership's a little more informed. So if you could introduce yourself and your title, please.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, my name is Todd Iverson. I'm Assistant Director of State Government Affairs for the university, and I want to preface this by saying this is not my area of expertise, and I do have a gentleman that is not here today, was with me earlier this week, but I will do my best to inform the committee, and if you have further questions, I'll be happy to have Mr. Perkins from our Office of Capital Management come in and testify further. At the university, because of our charter status, we have an opportunity to use different procurement methods than the state, and one of those is construction manager at risk. Construction manager at risk is a process where you bring together the contractor and the design team at the very beginning of the building process, and you have them work together on the design, as then the contractor will let bids based on that design that they come up with together. It has speeded up a number of projects over at the university in the last several years and saved a significant amount of money in large projects that we have built over at the university over the last several years. We use low bid and traditional procurement methods in 80% of our contracting at the university. We only use this other procurement method in about 20%, but they tend to be the very large buildings where it is advantageous to have the contractor and the architect together at the beginning of the process. We have shown significant savings through this process and have been able to come in under budget on all of our projects that we have used with these new procurement methods since 2002. Just so you're aware, there is also a procurement alternative bill moving through both bodies of the legislature to give the methods that we've been using to state MNSCU and other state agencies to take advantage of these the benefits of this other system. It passed the Senate 64-0. It is sitting on general orders in the House at this point, and this would be in direct conflict with that legislation. This bill would be in direct conflict with that piece that's moving through the process. I apologize, I don't have Mr. Perkins here with me. He could give you the exact examples, and he's supposed to have for me by today a list of all of the projects that we've used this on, but I will have it for the committee later this week.
Sure. Senator Metzen.
Yeah, I don't know how many years ago we kind of got started on this design build stuff, and I guess I'm not sure where this language is coming from, but it was my general opinion that on larger projects that this is working well and that we're probably saving money. I mean, they go in and possibly work around the clock, and it's a two- or three-step project instead of a 20. It saves money, and I guess I'm of the opinion that I think it's been working. Now, I know we've done it on some larger transportation projects and some larger buildings at the U and some others, and I guess I'm a little surprised at this language, so I'm of the opinion it's been working.
I think we might just punt it from now on and come back to it another time. Senator Michelle.
Mr. Chair, I understand and probably agree with the university that I'm not sure we need this language, but I'm wondering if the proponents of this language are here. I understand the opponent argument, and I'm sympathetic to it, but I'm not really sure where this comes from. And
It came, Senator Michelle, from Representative Krinke, who I believe is probably busy, but I think what we'll likely do is bring this back. I just thought we'd get an initial taste of what the discussion items were. We have had people in discussion with us, and being that it was marked up in committee, we really didn't have all the information. I think we just want members to kind of get what the U's response. Mr. Iverson, you weren't even at the markup, I don't believe, so
no,
I just
wanted
to give some courtesy to the U on this, that we're going to have a fully informed membership on both sides before we move any adoption or rejection of anything on this. Do you have any further questions for Mr. Iverson? Senator Larson?
I do not. I just ask that he's finished.
Anything else, Mr. Iverson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will make sure that Mr. Perkins is here next week.
Great, thank you. Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, we have Mr. Martin and Minneapolis Teachers and Mr. Larson all here if you want to take that up.
Being that this is a House position and we have all the players here, I would like to deal with this because this may take more than one meeting to work our way through this. So, Mr. Martin, are you available? We apologize. I know you're a busy person. The Minneapolis teacher folks, are you here? And who else did we want at the table?
Mr. Larson.
And Mr. Shepard, what page is the Minneapolis pension reform on? And members who are wondering why this is in the bill, The House felt that we are dumping 30 to 40 million per biennium into this fund, with warnings year by year that it is becoming more and more in trouble. While we rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic, I think we should at least try to close the hole, at least partially. And the House members felt very convinced that we need to at least try something and have a more focused discussion rather than having it as part of an 800-page pension bill. We link the appropriation with the reform so people understand that to get one, we potentially need to have the other. So,
Mr. Chairman, before we hear from the witnesses, would it be possible for the House to summarize the reforms that they're undertaking and set on R68? So we understand what your intentions are, how you intend
right.
to proceed.
Yes, Madam Chair, Mr. Shepard, I don't know if you're familiar enough
yep.
with this that you can walk through. I know we jettisoned out the more punitive proposals, and that Representative Kahn and Representative Mullery worked very hard on redoing this, so we can walk through it with staff so members understand what it is, and then we can have the commentary.
I think most of us fairly understand it, but I think if we let Mr. Martin, it might save us a good deal of time as to what we did this morning, and he can kind of summarize this whole stuff.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't care if it's Mr. Martin or the House, but I think that while you serve on pensions and Senator Michelle does, there's at least three senators who don't, and I think we should understand this difference as well. So,
Senator Cascade, and I think what we will be doing here, we'll have Mr. Shepard explain the House position on what we're doing. We'll have Mr. Martin explain potentially what happened this morning, although that's it's not in the bill, but I think maybe there's some things we can pull out of there potentially. I'll have Mr. Shepard just briefly walk through the key provisions of the House so everybody understands what we're doing.
Mr. Chair, can I interrupt for a second?
Senator Hagan.
Is there anybody who can shut the air conditioning off in this room? I, for one, am frigid over here.
This is a perennial problem with this room, Senator Higgins, and we have our committee in here.
Anybody know where the maintenance guys are?
Commissioner Badgero, there are other people who probably get paid more than you do to do these things.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Admin does have custodial control of the building, so I think she feels the same way you do. Mr. Shepard, let's briefly walk through and we'll turn over to Mr. Martin. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, there are two really key provisions in the House position, starting on the bottom of page R68. And the first one comes on page R69, lines 61.9 to 11, that provides that all or a portion of the assets of a first-class city teacher fund can be invested by the State Board of Investment. And then it also, the House bill follows up on that in sections 2 and 3 and 4. It doesn't change any of the current state aids that go to the city of Minneapolis or to the Minneapolis Teacher Retirement Pension Fund, but it provides that these aids would be invested by the State Board of Investment rather than by the fund. Probably the key substantive change in the House position comes on section 5 of this article, which is on page R70, and that changes the post-retirement adjustment formula for the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund Association, and it makes it identical to that for TRA and the other major statewide funds. The key difference between that and what the current law is that for TRA and the major statewide funds, if there are investment losses in a segregated post-retirement fund, those losses have to be made up before investment-based post-retirement adjustments can be paid. Minneapolis Teachers Fund has a different formula that either Ms. Kilberg or Mr. Martin can explain better than I can. And that's the key provision in the House bill. It would change that post-retirement adjustment formula and repeal the current Minneapolis one. That's a brief summary of the House position.
Mr. Martin, good afternoon. Do you have some testimony as this relates to the provision? My understanding was presented to pensions this morning by Representative Knobloch. Is that not correct, or at least it was talked about?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm Larry Martin from the staff of the Pension Commission. The Pension Commission has looked at the provisions that weren't included in the state government bill. They were part of the other materials presented to the Pension Commission about a week or so ago, and again were part of the packet materials for the Pension Commission during the morning session today. So the Pension Commission has taken a look at the House provisions that were included in the state government bill.
I was distracted, Mr. Martin. Senator Larson, did you have some clarifications and questions?
I think, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Martin, why don't you tell the conference committee what our action, preliminary action was this morning?
Mr. Martin?
Members, the Pension Commission did start addressing the issue of the Minneapolis teacher funding problem today. There was a tentative agreement to move forward, at least as far as the Senate Finance Committee, a proposal which would provide for a consolidation of the Minneapolis Teachers Pension Fund into TRA. There would be a benefit improvement also granted to TRA, a prospective benefit. It means a post-July 1, 2005 increase in the service rate in the formula benefit of 0.3%, essentially up 1.7 up to 2% on the formula multiplier. There were additional contributions required of all TRA members, all TRA employers, and also a special additional contribution required annually, split three ways for the City of Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Public Schools, and the State of Minnesota to fund some of the additional liability that is incurred by TRA.
Senator Larson, what's your thought process on this as a senator with a large TRA population?
Well, I think in light of the fact that the Minneapolis teachers have a $1,100,000,000 unfunded liability, and the fact that the TRA, Education Minnesota, support the merger, and I think we took out the unfunded liability 15 years from what, 2020 to 2035.
Yes, sir.
So I think we have it's growing by $100 billion a year, this unfunded liability. So we have to do something about it, and I think we've worked out a pretty reasonable solution to it, and we'll move that to the Finance Committee tomorrow and take a look at it. But your House members, who are, we've got 5 members of the House on the Commission plus 5 members of the Senate, so I think we had to start doing something. So this is our proposal,
Mr. Chair.
Okay. We haven't had a lot of support on both sides of the aisle on the TRA merger with this issue on the House side, but regardless of what the interest groups may think, I certainly know that there's a lot of problems with that, but we'll look at it. Is there something wrong with what we're proposing here as a potential solution outside of that, Senator Larson or Mr. Larson or Mr. Martin?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, I think
Ms. Kilburn.
Or Ms. Kilburn.
And she's very supportive of our proposal.
Well,
the
I mean,
one in
sure.
The Pension Commission, yes. Not this one.
No, the one in the Pension Commission. But I think Mr. Martin can probably answer some questions that you might have. So,
I mean, Senator Larson, if I was a manager of a fund that was in that much deficit and someone said, I'm willing to merge you with a fund that's got hundreds of millions of dollars to bail you out, I would be supportive of that if I was in that position.
For sure, yeah.
But, you know, as a House member who represents a lot of TRA members, I'm not sure that that's a wise decision. But Ms. Kilburg, why don't we have you give a little testimony, and what do you think about the, let's try to stick with the provision that's in the bill, and we'll progress from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would be delighted to do that. This bill actually incorporates two of the provisions that you've just been told would be in the merger. It also are two of the provisions that, although they're a little bit different, that we had proposed as an overall solution. And I think the thing that is important to keep in mind here is these two provisions, if they stand alone, don't necessarily do much, except for perhaps if investment earnings are great enough, allow us to pay benefits for a few more years. The I did have our actuary do an analysis of what the impact would be of going to TRA's post, and it is impossible to project what kind of excess earnings would be given on performance, but we do know that the TRA post or the state fund post actually have the ability to pay up to 2.5%, whereas we are capped at 2, we are guaranteed 2. So if inflation is higher, we would actually get a bigger benefit than we would if we kept our 2%, again, not counting the investment performance part of it. In our proposal that we had put forth, we had actually kept the 2% and had capped our post-retirement adjustment because we know that it is a problem and that it has caused some unfunded liabilities. I would encourage you to go a little bit further than this because it really would be a good thing to be able to solve this problem. And TRA is the one actually that has come forward with this proposal that was dealt with in the Pension Commission this morning. And I guess the last thing that I might say is if, pertaining to these two provisions, even if they allowed us to make benefit payments for a few more years, it does not address the unfunded liability, and the unfunded liability would continue to grow. And so ultimately, not only would we default, but if there were to be any kind of help for us, it would be of a greater magnitude than it would be today.
Ms. Kuhlberg, is there opposition to dealing with this mild reform in this bill with the appropriation attached and then allowing the Pension Commission to also kind of two-tiered move their proposal through? I don't feel comfortable putting the merger in here, obviously, but I don't think you do either. But I think being that this is fairly mild and moves us in the right direction, what is your thought process of adopting this, at least so we have something in the bill to show progress on the issue. Just in case the pension bill, too, may not come out, I'm sure it will, but in case there's problems.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess my comfort level would be there if I knew that everyone here understood that this really doesn't address the unfunded liability, that it could create some additional unfunded liabilities through this different post fund, and that if there wasn't any result from this, I just want people to understand that you're not really doing anything that where you can cross the I and dot the T's right now. It's just a what if situation.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Larson,
I think Mr. Bicker might want to say a few words.
Mr. Bicker from the State Board of Investment, did you, or were you going to talk to? Okay. What's our comfort level of the person? I don't think today we're ready to do it, but could you get the language ready, Mr. Bicker, and give it to staff? Okay. Do we have any more questions from members on this issue? Do we understand it enough? I mean, there's two provisions. One is the State Board of Investment doing the investing, which tends to have a better return, and then the other piece is the tying it to TRA-type benefits rather than what we do now. Any other concerns? I know the House members have heard this ad nauseum, but Senator Higgins.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm one of the six members of the Minneapolis delegation in the Senate, and this is the first I've seen it, so I don't know whether anybody else in Minneapolis on the Senate side, except maybe Senator Pogemiller, who's on the Pension Commission, has a clue it's here. It is. It makes me very uncomfortable to think that this pension provision is not in the pension bill where it rightly belongs. I'm very uncomfortable with having this here.
Okay. Any other comments? Or we have the on the House side, we have the perennial issue of the ongoing subsidy that House members are wondering why are we continually dumping in the dozens of millions while, as I said earlier, we don't even attempt to redo the deck chairs in the Titanic. Now, I understand the Pension Commission is trying to tackle it, but I think there's a fairly strong feeling on the House side that there needs to be some assurances of reform for the subsidy to go forward. So we'll have the discussion as we move on to the fiscals, but I at least wanted to get the initial discussion out there so we all understand what the problem is, and that potentially we would like to see a mild dose of reform. And maybe Representative Knobloch will be available next week if we get into having targets and moving toward these things, that he can come in as a guest star and give us a little bit of his thoughts, because this has been his bill for 2 or 3 years now.
I think, Mr. Chairman, that if Mr. Martin will get in touch with Representative Knobloch, I think that would be good.
Helpful. Okay, Senator Marty has arrived, I believe, and he understands, and Senator Morris here, Mr. Morris here, for... Senate, what page are we on here? Would you like folks like to come down and testify or let Senator Marty? Okay. We are in R37 and I thought R49, but R37 for sure.
49 and 50.
Some members on your side by side. This is 18.34, R37, Senate language. And Senator Marty, welcome to the conference committee. We are just going over this language, and if you could just give us a brief outline of why it's here and how this works.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the conference committee, this first provision on page 37 deals with when a state employee would be terminated involuntarily, and if they have any records, data related to their employment, the agency would not be able to destroy them or dispose of them until after the employee either has a chance to review them. They have a 10-day period in which to come in and review it, and if they did not set aside anything at that time that they want saved, or they didn't come in at all, the agency would be able to destroy them, but otherwise they'd have to keep them for, I believe, 2-year period of time. And we also have on page, the bottom of page 49 and top of page 50, bottom of page 49, top of page 50, the first section there deals with, I would all call it clarifying language, that an employee who is discharged from unclassified service, if they are on leave from classified service, this doesn't affect their rights as an employee in the classified service. And then section 19 is a provision that goes a little further than our existing whistleblower laws. Our current whistleblower laws deal the same for public employees as for private employees. Namely, you cannot retaliate against an employee for reporting something that's illegal. Here, the issue is if somebody's reporting something that is a serious abuse of the public function. We use serious waste, inefficiency, and mismanagement. And I know that I'm not sure who it was in either full finance or in the Senate division, talked about maybe instead of having all three of those, one of those three, and maybe tightening it up and then adding risk to health and safety. But it's something where something that comes short of an illegal action, but it's clearly abusive of the role of the government agency, where they're something that's really outrageous kind of ripoff of government action, you wouldn't be able to retaliate against the individual because of that. I'd be happy to stand for questions.
So, Senator Marty, on page R50, I'm trying to read the language that's very long. And I'm looking at the state, including a post-secondary institution, may not discharge, discipline, threaten, penalize, or otherwise discriminate against employee regarding their compensation, terms, conditions, locations, or privileges of employment because the employee in good faith reports or is in the process of preparing a report regarding waste and efficiency. Now, you're saying that the employee is being discharged because of this, not... I mean, otherwise I could have a half-typed-up report in my desk drawer and be lazy and not show up and whatever. you're not saying that. You're saying if you're getting discharged and disciplined because you're doing a report?
It's only if you're doing it because of the report. They can fire you for just about anything else. Certainly for unclassified employees, you don't. You can just get rid of them if you don't want them, unless except for certain protected classes and so on. And this would say, and right now, if you report some illegal action, this would be one step beyond things that aren't quite illegal, but they're clearly abusive behavior. And if you report that, if you serve as a whistleblower, I think we want to protect them for the public good instead of allowing them to be retaliated against.
Mr. Larson, what is the Employee Relations Department's views on any or all of this section?
Mr. Chairman, the Department of Employee Relations is opposed to this bill for a variety of reasons. First of all, we think that the discharge of an employee is a serious matter, and we do not shred material and destroy evidence. And I oversee the disciplinary process for the state employees in the executive branch. I can assure you, if there was ever an allegation that we destroyed evidence which would have exonerated an individual, we would return that employee back to work. So this, destroying the material is simply unnecessary and not needed. When you look at an office, for example, of a state employee, I've been with the state for 32 years. You walk in my office, I've got plaques, I've got a variety of personal items. A majority of the stuff is state equipment, state material. This is vague in nature and creates a huge administrative burden on the employer. Then with respect to the on R50, where we talk about the we cannot take action against an employee who brings an allegation of serious waste, inefficiency, or mismanagement. We believe that is overly broad, and it also applies to the over all of the unclassifieds. This would apply to any unclassified employee. And if you're about to have your appointment ended, who in these hearings haven't thought of someone that's been involved in serious waste, inefficiency, or mismanagement? And if you think you're going to lose your job, why wouldn't you advance that argument? Now, the original bill provided that we had to go to the Office of Administrative Hearings, and we anticipated that approximately 30 of these would occur here. They're represented by the Attorney General's office, and we've got about $500,000 in just hearings on this thing. Now, I don't see where in this bill now, there was some discussion, well, they can take you to district court. Again, we'd have to have state agencies represented by the Attorney General's office. Now, who's going to define serious waste, inefficiency, or mismanagement? I think we all have varying opinions of that. And so what this is really doing is it's extending a tremendous amount of benefits to people who have no property right to their job that are unclassified. And we believe that the current whistleblower laws that are in place now provide sufficient enough protection for our employees. I also believe it's important that you know, Mr. Chairman, that this would apply to, as I understand, every government jurisdiction in the state regarding the serious waste, inefficiency, or mismanagement.
Mr. Larson, is that the political subdivision language on 25.15? That carries over to cities, counties.
That's my interpretation. So if you have someone in North St. Paul that believes that they've been retaliated against because they reported inefficiency, we're going to be in some form, whether it's an administrative law judge or district court, and it also requires that we have to pay the fees.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I thought Mr. Larson remembered that we took out the provision about the administrative law judge. We did it because of concern that the state would be responsible, so somebody who was being terminated could bring up some flimsy excuse. This, without that provision in here, the person who is being fired and who is trying to show that they were retaliated against, they have to pay all the costs of going to court. That's not cheap. People don't do it frivolously. It makes it sound like that's going to be a big expense. I have heard, and I'm happy, as I said earlier, to try and look at language that might be able to tighten up on the serious waste, inefficiency, or mismanagement. The League of Cities said they were interested in trying to tighten that up some. They said they wanted to talk more, and I told them I would do so a few minutes ago.
Okay. Representative De La Forest, did you have a question for one of the witnesses?
I did, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps a question for the author that's related to the vagueness of the language. Good afternoon, Senator Marty, my former state senator from days back. I'm also looking at lines 22 and 23. You have language that says diminishes the value the public receives from the employer. And to me, that's sort of the heart of this language. And I'm wondering how you decided upon that language. Is that a term of art that's found somewhere in decisional authority? Because I have no recollection of it, and it seems to me that is very problematic language. And A, what does that mean? And B, under your scheme, who would be charged with defining that phrase?
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I had asked for what the appropriate language to find people who have fell short of this. Maybe Senate counsel can explain whether this is language that's appeared elsewhere in state law or not. I'm not wedded to that particular language. The point is, somebody who's reporting something that's harmful to the taxpayers, that's harmful to public health, safety, those things might be more appropriate than the three standards of mismanagement. But the point is, somebody who's pointing out something seriously wrong, and they get punished for doing so. They get punished for doing that. They should have a right to go to court and try and prove that they were punished because of that. And if so, that I don't think our state agencies should be allowed to do that. I don't think any government should be allowed to retaliate against somebody who's looking out for the public interest, who puts their career on the line, in effect, to try and make things better. But Senate counsel, maybe, I don't know where the language came from, and I don't know if it's in other law, but maybe he can tell us if it is or not.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar with the use of this term anywhere else in the statutes.
Mr. Larson, has the department worked on any language that may give some comfort to the concerns that folks have brought forward, or do you feel current law is sufficient enough to address these concerns?
Mr. Chairman, we've had several discussions with agencies regarding protocols that are in place on employees that have been disciplined regarding the retention of the data that they have in their office. I've also had discussions with the legislative auditor to make sure that things are in place for employees that want to report this type of alleged violations to them, and we believe that the current system that we have in place is sufficient enough for those employees that want to bring forth this kind of information. And we do. We get anonymous complaints. We get complaints from the Department of Employee Relations. We look into this. So we believe that the current protections that are out there for employees are sufficient enough. And again, at the risk of repeating myself, this is going to right now if we take a disciplinary suspension of an employee to arbitration, it costs us anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 just in front of arbitration. Now that's our expense, and there are seven of us in the labor relations bureau. I'm not sure who would handle these cases, but I can assure you we took just a stab at this and we figured 30 a year that will come. Who wouldn't
Mr. Chairman, I want to say it again. That provision was taken out of the bill where they could go to an ALJ. They have to go to court at their expense if they want to do this. It's not something somebody's going to frivolously say, well, I reported this waste and that's why they fired me. You're going to lose in court and it's not worth your time and effort. And as far as the need for it, there is nothing in law that gives you any protection unless it's you can show that what was happening was illegal. And there are a lot of things that are short of illegal that are outrageous behavior by government agencies. We're always telling our constituents how concerned we are about waste. And if this isn't the exact language, again, the League of Cities was interested in talking about whether we could tighten that up a little bit. Mr. Larson, he represents the employer very well, but there's sometimes the employer does wrong.
Mr. Moore, did you have any suggestions or changes of view to introduce yourself, please?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Vic Moore, and I'm not representing any particular party on this issue. I'm representing myself. I was reminded when you earlier introduced me to Senator Moore that I oftentimes got called that, and it wasn't in a complimentary manner because it was by members of the Senate who were sending me a message. So it rekindled some memory for me, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Messon disagrees with that.
I do too.
If I might just respond to some of the comments that Mr. Larson has made. I've got a great deal of respect for the Department of Employee Relations, and I think they've been overly defensive about this bill. Let me explain just for a minute what gave rise to this bill. And I've been reluctant to talk about this in other committee hearings, but a friend of mine, I became aware of, was terminated from a state agency 2-3 years ago. After she was terminated, the department, not Dewar. Dewar had absolutely nothing to do with this. The department went into her office, unknown to her, without notifying her, and shredded her files. This was an employee that had been a state employee for 30 years. I was a state employee for 30 years. When I left my office, and I hope to God I didn't take things that didn't belong to me, but I had boxes of stuff that I considered personal in nature that I took with me. She was not allowed the courtesy of reviewing, wasn't even notified that her files were going to be shredded. Later on, this became a whistleblower contest in court. And if you talk about a state expense that gets incurred, she had the Attorney General representing the department and the state that was very costly to the state. She had to pay for all of that herself. And that case ultimately got thrown out, and part of the reason was that she had not technically filed a whistleblower complaint. That's why the language that Senator Marty inserted in there in terms of the intent. Her claim, and I truly believe this to be true, was that she had information in her office that she was considering using on a whistleblower. The department destroyed that material. It became her word against the department's word. That's what gave rise to this legislation. It's not an attack on Dewar or the good job that they do. It's to remedy a problem that I saw occurred that I hope to God never happens to another individual.
Do we have questions for Mr. Moore or Senator Marty or Mr. Larson?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cascaden.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Marty's offered to try and work on some language on this. I think that probably it would be a good idea for him to meet with the department. I guess the question I would have is, we have... Mr. Moore knows that sometimes a single case can lead us to take a step that's bigger than we necessarily need to take. So I wonder if we couldn't ask Senator Marty to see if he can work through this with the department and with the League of Cities. And Senate does have a position in favor of the Marty bill. I think we've heard of a couple through two committees and got kind of extensive discussion in both of those. So perhaps time for Senator Marty to try and find a bit of an adjustment so that everyone's comfortable with what he's proposing.
Mr. Larson,
I'd be happy to do that.
Mr. Larson, is the department willing to at least put some comfort language together that might address legitimate concerns that might relate to this? I understand your position on this, but I think there may be some cases where I would sympathize with someone if it's a legitimate case. I'm just not exactly sure what that language might be. Has the department thought about anything yet, or not really in terms of some type of comfort language?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we certainly would be willing to work with them, but look at just the overall administrative responsibilities taking us on, and we would certainly be willing to meet with Senator Marty, and I have met with him, and we have had some discussions on this. And with respect to Mr. Moore, I was also involved in that matter, and I'm not going to really comment on it, but there was no evidence that was ever destroyed that could have been In that instance, if an employee who we do an investigation on says, there is data in my office that will prove my innocence, I can assure you that even under those circumstances and what Mr. Moore said, that did not happen. And if it did happen, Mr. Chairman, we would reinstate that person.
Okay, do we have any other questions from committee members on this matter before we hopefully can... But why don't we try to work something out on this? We'll defer this matter over. We just wanted to get a little bit more information on what the particulars were. Senator, we appreciate you coming over and visiting us here in the SOB. Why don't we have, is the State Auditor's Office here with some very similar language. Mr. Shepard, please refresh me on the... R25 to 30 on... waiver of rules. This is kind of the Board of Innovation, kind of a quasi version of that. The House and Senate are very similar, with the exception that the Senate sets up a grant program, which the House is not very interested in setting up any new programs. We have someone here from the Auditor's Office. Sir, if you could introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jonathan Papik. I'm the Communications Director for the State Auditor's Office. As you said, the main difference between the two bills is that the Senate side puts forward a grants board that in future years would be able to give grants to local units of government to cover the startup costs of cooperative efforts. The House chose not to include that portion. It is something that we're not asking for an appropriation at this time, but the auditor is interested in having it, the mechanism at least in place should funding become available in future years. I'd say we're more concerned about making sure that the waiver portion is in there and that is included in both versions.
We have some minor differences between the House and Senate that I think we could even reconcile today. I want to be very honest with the senators. I'm not really interested in setting up a grant program, whether we are in surplus or deficit. I just paying off local units of government to do the right thing, I think it's not something I'm interested in. But Senator Metzen, what do you think?
No, I think Senator Larson is looking for your attention, weren't you?
Oh, Senator Larson.
Yeah. Senator Cascade, can you tell us where this came from? I don't remember this.
Let me just think for a moment, Senator Larson. This was a Hottinger bill. We did hear it in division. It had been through state government policy and then came to us. The auditor was with Senator Hottinger, if you remember now. And this is reinstating the Board of Innovation. And as I recall, we had a unanimous support for this proposal as it came out of our division.
There was some concern from the Met Council folks on the House language. Is somebody here from the Met Council that they had preferred the Senate language over the House language? And so I told Mr. Shepard that he could walk through what the minor changes were and how to remove the grant program. So that language with the House intent on not doing the grant program and potentially adopt. Mr. Shepard, can you just give us the spots?
Sure. Mr. Chair, the parts in the Senate language that I think are different, and apart from the grant program, on R27, beginning on line 12.9, the Senate has a sentence that's not in the House bill that reads that for purposes of the waiver section, a procedural law does not include a statutory notice requirement. And then on page, the House has a phrase on page R27 on line 16.10. I think this perhaps is what the Met Council did not like. That the phrase in the House bill talks about an application submitted by a local government unit in the metropolitan area, whereas the Senate bill does not contain that phrase. And there is another further minor difference on R27 lines 12.23 to 12.24 where the Senate has the phrase about the applicable metropolitan agency. And I believe the Met Council preferred the Senate language. The other difference, Mr. Chair, is on if you did not do the grant program, then on page R25, that section 3 on the Senate language. And I'd ask Mr. Bodden, Senate Counsel, to help me on this one. It appears to me that if you didn't do the grant language, you might not need that section.
Mr. Bodden? That's correct. I would agree. This is formal only.
Do we have any members' questions about how this works? The intent of the chair would be to adopt the Senate language minus the grant program. Is there any concern? Senator Larson moves that. Council, can you just give us a quick idea of what we are adopting, and then we will have any discussion and we'll adopt it.
Mr. Chair and members, the language that I believe you would be adopting would be on the Senate side, all of page R26, all of page R27 on the Senate side, all of page R28 on the Senate side, and then on page R29, the language on the Senate side down to line 15.27.
Mr. Shepard, we would then jettison everything on R29 through R31, or not?
Mr. Chairman, we do have a request for one technical change, and I believe, Mr. Shepard say we were going to 15.27?
15.27, Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Shepard, I would prefer not to go. Let me just read this. I thought there was a problem with Subdivision 7, Mr. Chairman, so let me just read it for a second.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I was using that as a model for another problem in the bill, so I have no objection. But Mr. Botterman tells us there is a technical amendment.
Mr. Botterman?
Mr. Chairman, it's just there are two small items on line 12.26 on the Senate side on R27. I think it would be helpful after council to insert or agency, and that's just to make that entire clause consistent so that it's either the Met Council or the agency that's receiving the notice. And then the other change, I guess this is a matter of style, but the House language refers to local government unit on 16.2 on the House side. So on the Senate side, I think it would read a little bit better if on line 12.28 after government inserted unit.
Senator Larson will incorporate those changes into his motion. Do we have any concerns, questions from members? Senator Larson will move the language that was outlined by council with the incorporated changes Mr. Bodern just mentioned. Any questions? In the auditor's office, do you have any questions for the auditor's office? Okay. Senator Larson renews his motion to adopt the Senate language with the incorporated changes. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That section is adopted. Members, we have ways and means here very shortly. I think we're moving along here decently. Senator Cascaden, tomorrow it's Senate's turn. Do you have an idea of what you would like to have up tomorrow?
Chairman, I think it's really time for us to kind of, you and I have been able to identify some places where we could move forward. I hope we have a conversation later today to see if we can identify a couple more of those. But I do think it's time for us to just go through the bill again and let us ask you some questions about provisions that you have that we don't, and vice versa, so that we understand one another's point of view as before we have to move quickly to make some decisions. So my preference would be to do that. Mr. Chairman, I think we had talked about doing the pension things. We did that today. Members, we'll try and do a little notice out on what we're thinking we will be taking up so that we don't run into the time like we had today while we search for bill authors. But I think we really just need to understand, go through and understand one another's point of view. Yeah. I'm wondering, Senator Higgins and members of the work group, do you think there's a possibility you would be ready tomorrow? Because that's a huge section of this bill, if we can move forward with it.
Senator Higgins, Representative De La Forest.
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, I think my other conferees would agree that I would say that we're at about a 90% solution. I know that there were some areas in which we had tasked Ms. McKnight, for example, to draft some language to draw together similar but not identical provisions, for example. We were waiting also for a couple of answers from Senator Higgins' staff or the Campaign Finance Board in some areas where we had some questions. By the way, Representative Hilty and I did get an answer on one area of controversy, which we can share with you afterwards, Senator Higgins. We resolved that. So I think we're at the 90% solution, but I think we need one more half-hour type of meeting to sort of draw it all together and bring it forward to the main table.
Senator Kiskaden? Or Senator Higgins?
And Mr. Chair and Senator Kiskaden, if you want a paper report from us, it's about 90 pages of the bill, so it'll take a little time to put that together, unless you want me to do nothing more than, like, yes or no on a copy of the bill. But I think Representative De La Forest is right. We need a chance to go back and answer some things. We have the provision in the bill that was vetoed by the governor the other day, and the secretary's office thinks they have some language that can bring that back alive again and pass muster. And we just have some work, and I don't think tomorrow we'll do it.
We can look for that for Monday then, Mr. Chairman. And as long as we're on the topic of schedule, I was hoping the members would be willing to come in early and we could try and meet in Monday morning 8 to 10 before we all go into session. I know for people traveling from greater Minnesota, that's sometimes a challenge. So mull that over. But
who has the gavel on Monday?
I think you do.
I have to get up at 4 a.m. in order to get up here at that hour, so I might be a little... With two kids under the age of three, it's tough.
You're
when I don't see them five... Yeah, I'm ready. It's tough to dump them. My wife, you know, it gets difficult to be gone 5 days a week as it is. So
bring them with.
Might be... I don't think we want to bring them in, but I would say... I think... What time is the and having session Monday?
I believe we're scheduled for 10.
Okay. I think we'll probably end up meeting after would be my intent right now, but unless we have targets over the weekend, which, you know, good luck, but we'll see how it comes. What I would say, though, members, is that on the policy items, we do have some non-controversial items, I think, on the House and Senate side. I don't keep score per se, so if we could maybe move some of these items that potentially make a lot of sense, we could potentially get that out of the way as well. The other piece I think I'd like to decide for next week is, do members want to drag in the whole modular home, manufactured home licensing issue for a thorough discussion? And
Mr. Chairman,
and so
I suggest that since that is a Senate provision and we said we'd try and give people a 24 hours notice, could we take that up on Monday and just spend a little time on it? I don't think it's as probably as controversial as as it may appear, and I think we just get a little information out. We can probably then have a day. And then, Mr. Chairman, I think we need to bring in the Amateur Sports Commission as well, and I met with them this morning. I've asked them to put some materials together, and so perhaps we could tentatively look at Tuesday to have the Amateur Sports Commission come in and thoroughly review with us their proposal for lease of part of their lease and income from leased space on their campus.
Okay. Someone here from the Amateur Sports Commission? Okay. Why don't I didn't know that that was a there's a provision in the bill relating to the Amateur Sports Commission in here.
Mr. Chairman. I think he's ready whenever he's
okay. Why don't we plan for that? I would like to have manufactured home day not on Monday, though. I think why don't we shoot for Wednesday on that one?
On Wednesday?
Yeah. I would also tell members that the elections items are something I would prefer maybe to take up on Monday, as well as the campaign finance board items, the changes to reporting. The House has, I think, some extremely good provisions that senators would like. If we can visit about those, whether in public or private, doesn't matter, but... I think there's some very good pieces to there. And then there's some provisions in here on rule reform that NFIB, and I don't know who the Coalition of Labor and Business is, they had expressed interest in it, and some other groups.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it sounds like you and I need to meet and come up with a
schedule,
because we also need to look at the Office of Enterprise Technology and some of the other issues that are different in our two bills. So, members, it gives you the sense that we're planning to move and move quickly, but we have to come to a final agenda of what happens when. So I'm not going to sign off on every one of those agenda items or that schedule right now, but be glad to talk with you about it.
Okay, so we will plan on meeting tomorrow after session, assuming the Senate gets done on whatever. Senator Metzen, what are we doing tomorrow in the Senate?
Representative Clifford, is that an announcement you're running for the Senate?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm wondering what's going on potentially.
Do you have a presentation tomorrow?
No.
Special orders.
Doing general
special orders.
A lot of small
I think
bills.
We're going to do, what, 20, 25 special orders.
Okay. So why don't we plan a meeting after session? Senator Cascade and I will try to be in contact with affected parties in the room. I think we're moving along nicely. Is there anything else?
Mr. Chair?
No, Saturday, Sunday. Senator Higgins.
Could the elections people meet at about 8:30 on Monday morning? Would that work for you, too?
Guilty.
Nope.
It's up to you to work that out privately. Yeah. Should we just have you chat afterwards?
The house has an agenda for Friday morning.
Monday morning.
Oh, yeah.
Monday
okay.
morning.
Meeting is adjourned.
Monday.